everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers. They work in many fields and can teach us the art of living, how to live in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace for us all.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our program. I'm going to start with a piece titled The Human Library, Learning to Unjudge Someone. It's based on an interview with Ronnie Abigail, and the interview was conducted by a group member in the US by the name of Jason Francis. The human library is a library where the books are people who represent a stigmatized group. It was founded in the year 2000 by Ronnie Abigail as an international not-for-profit organization in Copenhagen, Denmark, where it is currently headquartered. Called Menneskebiblioteket in Danish, the human library seeks to create more inclusive communities by helping individuals overcome stereotyped images and preconceived notions about other people. A borrower can take out a volunteer book and speak to them about their lives. The human library is now active in over 80 countries, though doing a little bit of research before this program, I noticed we don't yet have a human library in New Zealand. Jason Francis interviewed the library's founder and director, Ronnie Abigail, for Share International magazine. And his first question was, how did the idea come about for people to volunteer as books? And Ronnie's reply, the idea of the library came about for me 21 years ago. I wanted to create a safe space where we could explore our diversity without being judged. If we could create a safe space, would a person be able to help challenge stereotypes by offering their journey as a source of information that others could learn from? Someone with a disability, a different ethnic minority background, gender identity, mental health history, or with an occupation that has certain negative stereotypes attached to it. I thought, why not try it? I managed to convince my associates. It started when we got an invitation to host some activities at a big music festival. But then it went beyond expectations, and I realized that this could work in a library, school, concert, festival, or almost anywhere where you had the readership available. I think people volunteer as books because there is a deeply rooted human desire within every one of us, the chance to be understood and included. There is a saying, a stranger is a friend you haven't met yet. It's literally true to the extent that you may think that you don't have a lot in common with people from a completely different part of the community than yours, or with a very different background. But when you have an open and honest conversation, you discover you're not that different from one another. And you realize that any differences shouldn't be of great concern and allowed to divide us. And the next question, how many titles or groups of volunteer books does the library offer? About how many people currently volunteer? Thousands of people are volunteering to be published in our sessions. We have a methodology based on what understanding these prejudices, based on what we call our 15 pillars of prejudice. Each of our pillars represents a group in the community and the core reason why they may be potentially stigmatized. For example, religion, disability, or mental health. By better understanding these prejudices, we can help remove obstacles to engaging with and benefiting from these groups. The selection of topics depends on availability. In Huntsville, Alabama, you may find some topics on the bookshelf, but in Fort Wayne, Indiana, you will find other topics. And in Copenhagen, Denmark, you might find groups that wouldn't even be valid to publish in Fort Wayne because they wouldn't recognize these issues or understand how this certain group is being stereotyped or stigmatized. Could you give us an example of someone who volunteered as a book? One example was a Danish woman who was a victim of incest. Her stepfather had abused her when she was young. She said, "This whole process of being an open book of what happened to me, sharing with others my perspective on how I responded and why, was healing for her, an opportunity for self-reflection and new perspectives in response to readers' questions. It was also a unique opportunity for us to get close to a problem we rarely have the social courage to think about because it is so taboo and stigmatized. This Danish woman made a big impression on all readers." How does a reader take part in a human library event? They can join us in many ways. They can come to a session that has been announced. Let's say there was a public library near you and we had agreed to publish our book there. That means you can come into a library and at the desk get some guidance on the rules. Then choose your book and sit down in a one-on-one or bring your family and have a small group meeting. That would give you about half an hour with an opportunity to extend that meeting if all parties agree. Many times our readers will spend several hours at the library and borrow a variety of books. In Copenhagen, we have a permanent meeting garden and library. We have institutions that visit us per agreement. A high school or college will come by on weekdays, for example. On weekends, we host events for the public. In places like New York, Chicago, Indianapolis, Los Angeles, and the San Francisco Bay Area, we have a local book depot, a local chapter of the Human Library, where we have volunteer books and librarians, and sometimes also paid staff like the book depot manager. A library or high school can reach out to the local Human Library book depot, and they will come to their institution. These opportunities now exist at an institutional level and at other local levels, like festivals and community activities. But we are also partnering with companies to help them look at how they can create more inclusive workplaces. We have been a bit challenged by COVID and not able to run the same number of in-person activities we used to hold a couple of years ago. But now we are hosting a lot of events online. How do people find out about the Human Library? Do you do any outreach? We try our best, but we don't have a lot of money. We are a free service. We really depend on media that hear about us and write something. Then readers can go to our website or social media. In the past 2 years, we've been blessed with a lot of attention from big international media platforms. We've gotten more press exposure in the last year and a half than in the previous five. There's more coming this year, including a documentary, which is going to be streaming from one of the big distribution platforms. How are readers changed after a conversation with a volunteer book? Many are inspired beyond the moment. We've gotten detailed letters from readers who joined us 17 or 20 years ago saying they still remember their day with us. For some of the readers, and also for some of the books, the conversations have had a life-changing impact because in the process, they realise things about themselves that enable them to take part in this world in a more open way, engaging with people they would previously have been hesitant to reach out to. It empowers us to be more included in the community and also to feel a part of something much bigger. And the last question, what impact do you see the human library having around the world? We have been here 21 years. We're in more than 80 countries, and the demand is higher than ever. I think that's because there is an incredible impact both on a personal level and a community or organisational level. The human library works towards a more open and understanding and, hopefully, more peaceful world where we don't have to resolve our differences with violence and conflict. Conversation, being open and honest with each other, leads us to trust. How do we get people back to the table and start realising that only through conversation can we find common ground and give each other an opportunity to be unjudged? That's the article. That was from the June 2022 issue. And you can find more information in the website humanlibrary.org. And now for something of, I guess, a more esoteric or spiritual nature. This is actually the remainder of an article I read out during a previous program on the subject of Sai Baba, a spiritual teacher. He passed away in 2011, leaving millions of devotees in a wide range of countries and a very important legacy in many fields, including health and education. Having established on his ashram in Puttaparthi in India, colleges for both boys and girls, and an excellent hospital where patients were not turned away if they could not pay. So the last portion of this article begins with a quote from Sai Baba. Start the day with love, live the day with love, end the day with love. And before we go through the remaining paragraphs, I'll just read you a little bit by Benjamin Cream on the subject. He said of Sai Baba, I would say that Sai Baba is the most fully divine being to grace this planet with his presence. He is an avatar, not out of the earth evolution, but a cosmic visitor, so to speak. Sri Sathya Sai Baba is a spiritual regent, a representative of divinity on our planet, and embodies the energy of cosmic love, or the Christ principle at the cosmic level. That energy flowed and continues to flow from him into the world. Asked about Sai Baba's life and death, Benjamin Cream said, it is a great loss, but Sai Baba has not gone away. Although he has left his physical body, he will continue his work. Sai Baba was the second of three incarnational manifestations on earth of a great spiritual being. The first incarnation was as Sai Baba of Shirdi. The second life was as Satya Sai Baba, and he himself predicted that the third and final incarnation would be early in the 21st century as Prema Baba, and that he would be born in the state of Karnataka. Sai Baba's life was a life of service, and it is key in all his teachings. So, carrying on with the article. Currently, people can feel discouraged, indeed overwhelmed, by wars and disputes, by politicians who choose tension and opposition over dialogue and consensus in the face of society's many problems, by so many unmet needs around the world, especially access to enough food, clean water, and adequate shelter. The feeling is, what can I do? I am just one person. But this is exactly the glamour, or the basic feeling of imagined helplessness, that prevents us from useful action that connects us to others and gives meaning to our life. Sai Baba taught that hands that help are better than lips that pray. This does not mean that prayers are useless, only that in a life which can and should include service, prayer is not in itself a substitute for action. As for the feeling of helplessness, it can be banished by action. In every city, town, and village in this world, there are people who need help. And answering a human need can be as simple and deeply significant as accompanying an old person who lives alone with a simple cup of tea and an hour or two of company, or helping an overworked mother by offering babysitting, or clearing someone's garden, or offering a chat on the phone to someone who is ill, or helping someone with their shopping, or running a few errands for someone who is housebound for various reasons. The sense of being helpless leads to inertia and is partly due to the feeling that small things don't matter, but they do. And coming together with a few other people who are already engaged in some form of service is also an important way to challenge and overcome this feeling, to learn from others and to develop a sense of purpose which creates joy. Sai Baba maintains that this giving of self and service is even more valuable than donating money from the point of view of the person's own development. Sai Baba addresses both devotees and non-devotees with these words. I am with you always. Your heart is my home. The world is my mansion. Even those who deny me are mine. Call me by any name, I shall respond. Picture me in any form, I shall present myself before you. I am in the least of you as in the best. Do not slander or injure anyone, for you are slandering me who is in him. And we can take heart from his unique welcome to all and from his words of solace. Deliver all your anxieties, troubles, travails, and desire to me, and in return receive joy, peace, and strength of mind from me. And there's actually a couple of references mentioned here, books, if you're interested in finding out more about Sai Baba. The books, the first one is called Sai Baba, The Embodiment of Love, and that's by Peggy Mason and Ron Lang. There's another book here called From Where Did You Come by Charles DeFazio. And anyway, we do seem to have a little bit more time, so I thought we could finish with a quote from a message from Maitreya. And as I'm sure I've mentioned several times in previous programs, Benjamin Krem received several messages through him during public lectures in Euston Road, London, during, I think it was around 1979 to 1982. And these messages from Maitreya were sent through in such a way that Benjamin Krem was fully conscious of what was happening, but his voice and the energy behind the voice was altered so that it was Maitreya's energy and words that came through. So I'll just read out a random piece from one of Maitreya's messages given at that time. My principles take hold of men's minds. My love penetrates their hearts. My simple words find response, and my law begins to govern. Thus may you say with me, my friends, that the future for man is bright, that the love of God is established abroad, and the law shall flourish. Many there are who doubt my presence. Many there are who seek for me in vain, looking upwards to the sky and finding me not, cast me out from their hearts. The simple truth, my brothers, is that I am a man among men, living among you as such, knowing and feeling your griefs and needs, loving and caring for you, desiring to share with you the blessings of God. Look upon me thus, my friends and brothers, and know the meaning of trust, know the value of love, and know the blessings of God's plan for all men. Well, I hope you enjoyed the information that was shared today. If you would like more information, check out the website share-international.org, or you are most welcome to email us at sharenz@yahoo.com. And thanks again for listening. Wishing you all a lovely week.